Merritt Street, we're building a new morning show where our guiding principle is to always value your time.
We'd love for you to join us. Be part of our community.
Each morning will be packed full of news, information, advice, and a lot of fun.
And we promise we'll never waste your time.
I'm Dominique Soxa.
I'm Fanchon Stinger. Join us for Morning on Merritt Street.
8 a.m. Eastern, 7 Central. Essential television.
Happy Wednesday, Secret Squad. I'm Robin McGraw, and this week's episode is going to make you feel passion, inspiration, and hope. We're talking about the secret to activating your activism muscle. I met new Paul Kiazolu on the set of Dr. Phil, and I had to have her on my podcast. New Paul is an internationally recognized civil rights activist and organizer, speaking across the nation on civil rights, domestic and sexual violence, and homelessness reform. She has strong ties to the Black Lives Matter organization, has been on the front lines of some of the biggest protests in our nation's recent history, and started an initiative called Vote 2000 to encourage more young people to get out to the polls. Oh, and did I mention that New Paul is still a student in college? Thank you so much for being here. You are so inspiring.
Thank you so much. I'm super excited to be on right now.
Oh, well, listen, I read that you started your activism at 12 years old. How did that fire get sparked in you?
So my push into activism was the tragic murder of Trayvon Martin. I was 12 years old when he was killed. And long story short, my activism started with the silent protest I held at my middle school. I came in the following day of his murder and I had a gray hoodie on and I taped a message to my back saying, "Do I look suspicious?" And I had Skittles and iced tea in my hand to represent what Trayvon had in his hand at the time that he was murdered. And it caused a lot of controversy within my school. I was in a predominantly white middle school in Georgia. So a lot of the staff felt that it was too political, but nonetheless, I persisted. And overall, we went to the principal's office. I ended up winning the case. And the last day of my silent protest, we went to the cafeteria and I saw every single student in there with their hoodies on and the same exact message taped to their back saying, "Do I look suspicious?" And that's when I knew that being an activist and organizer was my calling. So, yeah, that's like the short version of it. But that's when I knew that being an organizer was my calling. And I never stopped since.
Oh, I love that you stood your ground. I love that you had that heartfelt message that you wanted to put out and that you won. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's just wonderful. You sacrificed your time and your energy and safety to get out on the street and stand up for what you believe in. What drives you to do that?
That's a great question. Honestly, people, humans, really drive the work that I do. I love people. And service is like the entirety of my life. Like, I know that God put me on this earth to serve, and I am more than happy to fulfill my purpose. And I'm just blessed to know at 20 years old why I was put on this earth, because some people go their entire lives not knowing their purpose. So,
That's a beautiful message, because I have actually been saying that for pretty much my entire life. I believe that as far back as 12 years old, I knew I was put on this earth to be a wife and mother. And I honestly pray every day, thank God for allowing me to do just what I really, truly believe I was put on this earth to do. So I really can relate to that. I'm so impressed at that very young age, you knew what you were meant to do, and you have been doing it since then. I'm going to be so moved, I know, through this entire podcast. It's like I feel like I'm on the edge of tears because I'm already so moved by everything you're saying, because you are at such a young age and you're so passionate. So I know you and some of your struggles and your history. So with your permission, I would just like to talk about what you have experienced and that, you know, coming face to face with the violence and the confrontations you've had with the law enforcement and how you have been able to handle that.
Yeah. So, as I said, this work on the front lines definitely is not easy. It's definitely traumatic in a lot of different settings. And I spoke about it briefly on the Dr. Phil show, but I was almost killed by the Minneapolis Police Department. We're literally walking back to our car with the team after a long day of nonviolently protesting and helping folks on the front lines. There's been many different traumatic interactions, but how I deal with it, I've been getting better with trying to develop more healthy coping mechanisms as opposed to just like putting work on top of trauma as a means to like escape it.
Yeah. And even with all of that, yeah, you felt compelled to overcome those PTSD type reactions of fight or flight, aside for the greater good. How have you done that? You just now touched on some, but it's amazing how you have still stood your ground, because that had to be some of the scariest times of your life, short life already, it's young life, but you stood your ground.
Yeah. First and foremost, it's God that, you know, takes me through everything and all of my struggles. And I know that God wouldn't give me anything I can't bear. After every interaction I have on the front lines and just every day, I just pray to God for stability and an equilibrium within me. My faith keeps me going. I am definitely a Christian. I'm a proud believer. And that's what really keeps me going every single day. So yeah, like God is my foundation and then everything follows.
God bless you. So your faith and your passion is so strong that it gets you through. Can you take me through the moment when you were faced with the same threat that you faced as a child that led to tragic abuse, this time by a law enforcement officer?
So being on the front lines and having that traumatic interaction with the police definitely took me back to a lot of traumatic events in my childhood. I grew up around gun violence, and more recently, like I lost one of my close friends to gun violence. Like, you know, my mentee got shot, but he survived. So it's like, you know, all those different interactions, like, you know, it just all comes back every time I have a traumatic interaction on the front lines. And when those like PTSD flashbacks start, I have to like just wherever I'm at, just take like a quick second to mentally collect myself. So I get really quiet and I just start doing like deep breaths and just calming myself down. Whatever I can do in that very moment to stay level-headed as an organizer and leader on the front lines. So yeah, it's definitely not easy, but like, I believe I've had so many different negative interactions with law enforcement and agitators on the front lines that I'm kind of used to it. So now I just know how to respond quickly while maintaining on the inside.
Wow. Well, again, I just want to say that I'm so humbled by the fact that I just even get to sit and visit with you this morning, because you are such a strong, passionate woman. And I'm just really impressed. Do you feel some of the small percentage of protesters that are looting and being destructive are given the media an easy target to discredit the mainstream sincere protesters? Or do you think that there is no such thing as going too far?
Well, so for me personally, I choose to be a nonviolent organizer. Now, make no mistake, I am not peaceful. When I say no justice, no peace, I mean that. We are meant to, like, we're disrupting the status quo. We don't want any peace until Black people are afforded justice and equity within this country. But I do that, my work, nonviolently. Now, right. For the small percentage of people that choose to loot and burn things down, that I don't condemn, nor do I support it. I just focus on the work that I do as an organizer. I know that every event that I lead and organize is nonviolent. And MLK did say that a rioting is the language of the unheard. So it's like, when we were peaceful, when we were taking a knee, when we were marching and linking arms and singing hand in hand, it was a problem. Now that people are being more overt with how they feel, it's still a problem. So honestly, it's always going to be a problem to the people that want to keep these systems of power in place because they benefit from them. So, you know, I'm no longer in the business of working to make other people feel comfortable. I'm just focused on liberating Black people all around the world, not just in the United States. And I really believe that we should value lives more than property, because honestly, a broken window can be replaced, but a Black life can't. So that's my stance on that.
I love that. I love that you truly believe that you have a passionate voice, you have a belief, and you're going to stand for that. And it does not mean that you are responsible for everyone else's belief and how they handle it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, you know, there's a small group of people that partake in that type of organizing. And it's like, okay, like cops say the same thing, like, oh, you know, there's just a few bad apples, which I don't believe that. But they say that. They say it's just a few bad apples. Why are you guys trying to paint all of us as the bad guy? Well, it's ironic that you say that, because we're saying the same thing. Like, there's a small percentage of protesters that are causing a bunch of destruction and whatnot. That does not account for the entirety of the movement, because everyone organizes differently. So It's just the irony within those statements. But yeah.
I agree. I can imagine standing up for what you believe in is hard, but even harder when you don't have many allies. Maybe your friends or neighbors aren't into it with you. You didn't have many with you at your school, but what kept you going during that time? And what do you say to people that feel strongly but kind of alone in their convictions, maybe within the family or circle of friends?
Wow, that is a really, really great question, actually. It was definitely hard in the beginning doing this work, because I didn't really have a lot of family support. A lot of them didn't really understand why I was doing what I did. And a lot of times, from my mom's perspective, of course, like as a mother, she's worried about my safety and all that. So we would argue about stuff like that. But eventually they came around, and like now my family's more supportive now, like now more than ever. And I really appreciate it. But what I would say to people that feel alone in this fight and want to stand up for something they believe in, one, your voice matters first and foremost, because if you don't believe your voice holds power, then how can you expect anyone else to? So you have to believe in yourself before anyone else does. You have to believe in yourself more than anyone else does. And that's what keeps me going. That's what kept me going when I was just, you know, a loner doing this work before it was sexy and sensationalized. I used to get bullied for being an activist. Like, you know, it just was not cool back then. But yet, because I recognize that this movement is greater than me as an individual, that's ultimately what kept me going. Recognizing that whether or not I receive recognition for this work or have others standing beside me, that doesn't matter, as long as I know that I'm on the right side of history.
Oh, that's so beautiful. That's so beautiful. I love that you say, you know, if you don't believe in yourself, then how can you convince anyone else what you believe in? It kind of reminds me of a quote. If you continue to put yourself second, then that's what you're telling everyone else. You come second. And I just think that's so simple, but it's something that I truly believe in. One of my mission statements is that it's not selfish to put yourself first, to take care of yourself, to put yourself at the top of the list so that you can be there for your family. So I can be there for my husband, my children, for those I love. So I don't think it's selfish to put myself first. But if I always put myself second, if I put everyone else first, then I'm just teaching them I come second. And I don't think that's healthy at all. So let me ask you this. What did it mean to you to have your teacher stand beside you and support you?
So that meant absolutely everything. Like when I first started out in activism, like my only ally was my math teacher, and she's a Black woman. Oh. And ironically, I got written up by my history teacher. I'm just like, okay. Oh. Yeah, like I literally got written up by my history teacher, and my math teacher is the person that supported me and literally risked her career by marching down to the principal's office with me in solidarity with her hoodie on. And allyship is just so important, because like we can show up for each other in so many different ways, because there's different scales of privilege, and age is definitely one of those. And like, you know, as a young organizer, I face ageism on the daily. Like a lot of adults underestimate me and my power, especially at the time I was only 12 years old. So I definitely needed that ally in my corner to say, hey, like you guys are not going to bully her out of what she believes in and knowing that she's right. So she stood by me, and that really, man, like every time I think about her, like it's literally my life's mission to like find her. Like Miss Gibbs, if you listen to Robin McGraw's podcast, like please like message me, hit me up. I've been trying to find you, but she was my math teacher at Stone Mountain Middle School in Georgia. And I absolutely love her. She's played such a huge role into me becoming the woman I am today. I will never forget her.
Oh, so, I love that. Tell us her name again.
Miss Gibbs.
Miss Gibbs. And what grade did she teach you?
She taught me in sixth grade at Stone Mountain Middle School.
We're going to find her. That's a mission.
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
We're going to find her.
Yes. And the principal that didn't suspend me at Stone Mountain Middle School, he's still there. I forgot his name, but I thought I was going to get suspended. But instead of him suspending me, he sent me home to do my research and have my case ready for him the following day. And that's what literally inspired me now to become an attorney, an elected official. And the case that I used to argue that entire day was the Supreme Court case, Tinker versus Des Moines. And that was the focal point of my argument. And he, at 12 years old, he was like, how the heck do you know about that? I was like, you told me to do my research. So that's what I did. And so him and Ms. Gibbs, like if you guys are anywhere out there and you listen to this amazing podcast, just hit me up. Like I would love to see you guys again.
Oh, bravo. Bravo for both of those fine adults. Oh, we're going to find both of them. It would just be wonderful. It would just make our whole lives if we could find those two for you. I just love them already. Can you explain what racial justice is?
So what racial justice means essentially is equity across all sectors of society. And, you know, when we talk about the Black Lives Matter movement, I was saying that it doesn't just mean like only Black Lives Matter. It's saying that Black lives need to be prioritized at this very moment because we're in danger. It's like if somebody's house is on fire, like 2-3 doors down, the firefighters are not going to come to your house to set a fire out that's not there. They're going to give attention to the house that's actually on fire. So it's like, it sounds ridiculous. And it's like, why? What about my house? Is your house on fire? Like, you know, it's just, I don't think it's such a hard concept to understand, but I understand that, you know, different people are at different points in life. So I'm a firm believer in meeting people where they are and where they are. And if they want to have a conversation with me, an honest dialogue, I will. But yeah, overall, like racial justice is just equity within all sectors of society, not just equality. You know, racial justice doesn't just mean that because I can sit next to a white person, everything is fine and dandy. We have to really begin to deconstruct these systemic barriers that are in place that prevent Black people from really achieving as a collective. So, you know, and there's, you know, a lot of people bring up like, you know, the minority of Black people that are wealthy and are successful, but as a collective, systemically, we are oppressed. So, yeah.
I love that analogy too. It's perfect. So can you explain to the listeners what Black Lives Matter is and what it stands for? Is it an organization or a movement? Now, I know this question may sound simple that, and you're thinking, surely everyone by now knows, but I don't think they really do.
Yes, that's a great question. So Black Lives Matter is a movement. It does not reside within an organization, a person, or a title. This is a worldwide movement. Now, there is like a centralized, like official organization that is entitled Black Lives Matter that was founded by 3 queer Black women. But overall, this movement has gone all around the world. And the beauty of it is that it is decentralized. So it's like there's not just one person leading. Like Black people from all around the world have rose up under the guise of this movement, Black Lives Matter. So yeah, that's what BLM is. And it's a movement towards Black liberation and racial equity and justice.
Wonderful. What is an ally in terms of activism?
Yeah, so an ally can take many different shapes and forms, right? As a cisgender woman, I can be an ally to a trans woman. I can be an ally to a trans man. As someone that, An ally basically is someone that has some sort of privilege that they can use it to help someone else, essentially, right? But in terms of the movement, if you want to talk about, you know, white and non-Black people being allies to the movement, you know, white people play a role in this movement as well, in terms of allyship and showing up for Black lives and for the cause. So, yeah, like I would just overall to wrap it up, just say an ally is someone that, you know, everyone holds some type of privilege in this world. So it's showing up with that privilege to help someone else that does not have that. And I try to break everything down in simple terms so it's digestible for everyone.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
The first page of a book never tells the full story. And those news alerts and headlines, like the ones we get on our phones, don't even scratch the surface of what the story is really all about. Stories are like people, multi-layered and complex. It takes some digging to find the truth, but when we find it, it can change our world. We like to dig. The news on Merritt Street, Essential Television.
Lauren, we are sisters.
That's true.
And we host a celebrity-obsessed podcast called Pop Apologists.
We also love Taylor Swift. Chandler, how are you managing to cope while we await Taylor's new album?
Look, I want to be put into a medically induced coma and wake up on April 19th, but I'm not sure my insurance is going to cover it.
Join us on our pop culture podcast, Pop Apologists, where we will be dishing on all things celebrity news and deep diving every word and note of Taylor's new album.
Pop Apologists.
Pop Apologists.
I want to stop right here. We do two things on this podcast consistently with every episode. And the first thing we're going to do right now is the drink of the day. And so I'm just going to take a little break. And sadly, we're not together in the same room, so we can't actually share it together. But what I'm going to do is dedicate this drink of the day to our podcast. And all of the listeners can go to I've Got a Secret with RobinMcGraw.com, and we always show the drink and we give the recipe. And in honor of our podcast together, I've created the Lemonade Spritz. And this lemonade spritz has 5 fresh mint leaves, 1.5 ounce of fresh lemon juice, 1/2 ounce simple syrup, 3.5 ounces of club soda, and 1 lemon wheel. And, you know, I don't know, there was just something about it that I thought was just fresh. And the spritz and the name of it, the lemonade spritz, just made me feel fresh and alive and happy and refreshing. And that's how I feel about you. So I'm going to show you this, and I wish you were here and we would both have this together. And I'm going to explain how I made it. In a shaker, you combine the mint leaves, the lemon juice, the simple syrup, and ice. You shake it for 10 seconds. Pour into a glass and you top it with the lemon wheel. So cheers to you and everything you stand for.
Thank you so much. And I love cooking and like making new things. That's like my favorite hobby. So, oh, that looks great. I'm gonna make that.
Okay, good, good. So that's our drink of the day. And now we can move on. So let me ask you this question. How do racism and prejudice differ?
Oh, wow. That's like my favorite question. Okay.
Oh,
I talk about this all the time, like literally. Oh my, and like I go to Hampton University, proud Hamptonian, the real HU. And like everyone that has class with me knows, like when this conversation comes up, like DuPaul is going to talk about it. So.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Okay. Well, how funny that I asked you that question.
Amazing. So, okay. I like breaking this down in simple words. Like academia has its place in the movement, but also I have to recognize as well that that's a privilege. Like I can explain this type of stuff and in the academia sector, but a lot of people don't understand that stuff. So what prejudice is essentially is what a lot of people believe racism to be. So like, for example, a lot of people say racism is just, I don't like you because of the color of your skin. And that's it. That's what we've been taught to believe what racism is. And that is, in fact, not true. Like, that's not the only scope of racism. Now, of course, prejudice intersects with racism, but that's not the entirety of what it is. And anyone can be prejudiced. But in order to be racist, you have to have that power plus privilege in a system that benefits you. And, you know, a lot of people, when they hear the term like racist and racism, they automatically think, oh, my God, like, I'm such a horrible person, like in white people, like, you know, I'm such a horrible person, this, that, and the third. And like, when I talk about this stuff, right, I believe we'll make progress if we are honest, one, if we're honest about what it is, who benefits from it and who bears the brunt of it. But also there's a lot of feelings surrounding it that, you know, and a lot of people frame this conversation just off of feelings. And if we try to like begin to stray away from that and like, listen, of course, you know, there are feelings involved in this, but this is also a systemic problem. You know, this is not just about how I feel. Like, it's not just about hurt feelings. It's about people literally bearing the brunt of a system that was made, that was built against them. And, you know, a lot of people say that this system has failed Black people, but I'm like, no, this system is doing exactly what it was designed to do. So that's why we have to deconstruct and reconstruct it as a collective with everyone at the table so we can be able to have a better America and a better world. But, you know, that's the difference between racism and prejudice. Like, prejudice is, that's, anyone can be prejudiced. You know, those are biased feelings towards someone. And but to be racist and racism is a system. And even the word itself, the irony in it is self-explanatory. Like, the suffix ism means system. So the word itself is telling you that this is a systemic problem, but America is telling you it's just because I don't like you because you're Black or white or whatever your skin color is. We just have to do a better job at, you know, really changing the narrative around this and holding our education systems accountable. Like, listen, like, you have to change the way that this curriculum is taught on racism because it's not doing us any justice. Because every time a huge event happens that's surrounding, like, you know, racial tensions over boiling, everyone wants to act shocked, like Charlottesville. Everyone was acting like, this is not who we are. I'm like, no, this is exactly who America is. And until we come to terms with that, we're going to keep going in this cycle that will never end.
That's so true. You know, I have a foundation named When Georgia Smiled, and we focus on domestic violence and sexual assault. And whenever I travel anywhere in the country to speak on behalf of my foundation, the bottom line, sounds very simple, but the bottom line is I always make sure that everyone understands education is key to helping anyone that suffers in this horrific syndrome. Like, anyone who is a victim and survivor of domestic violence will tell you education is key. We must educate everyone what domestic violence is, what sexual assault is. If we don't educate our families, if we don't educate our loved ones and our friends about domestic violence and abuse, and if you are an abuser or if you are a victim, it will never end. It will never change within the family, within your circle. Education is key. And I believe that's what you're saying right here with this topic. Education is key. You can't change what you don't acknowledge, what you don't understand. So tell me, how can someone unlearn prejudice?
Yeah, absolutely. So like you said, education is the most important step. So really just starting to like read, and that's not the only solution, but man, let me just get to the point. Google is too free and accessible to be willfully ignorant. We are in the age of technology. This is one of the greatest times to be alive. And I tell people, like, it's a simple search bar. You type some things in. What is racism? How do I benefit from racism? Like, there's just so many different ways that you can educate yourself on these topics. We have access to everything at our fingertips, literally.
That's right.
So, you know,
just think about when your principal sent you home to educate yourself, to do your research. That's exactly what you did at 12 years old.
Exactly, at 12. So it's like anyone can do this. Like, it's not rocket science. It's really just having the willpower. And, you know, for allies and white people and non-Black people that walk into these spaces and they want to learn, they want to hear, What I would suggest for you, first and foremost, is to walk in with an open mind and open heart and open ears. You can't come in on defense in these situations because there's going to be a lot of conversations that you're going to feel uncomfortable. But through that uncomfortability comes productivity. And, you know, that discomfort you may feel for like 5 to 10 minutes is what Black people feel every single day across this world times 10. So you just have to be willing to listen, educate yourself. The 13th is another amazing documentary by Ava DuVernay that is 60 minutes long. But in that 60 minutes, it will literally change your entire perspective because I know it changed mine.
I love that. We will put that on our website and any other information, any other articles, any other books, anything else that you can tell us about, we will also list those on I've Got a Secret with RobinMcGraw.com. Do you have a mentor or role model you look up to in activism?
Yes. Wow. There's so many. Honestly, there's just so many. But I would just say the Black women in my life really, really play a huge role into, like, you know, me being who I am today. Just that sisterhood and that support system is like literally unmatched. And like a person that I look up to, I don't know her personally, but she's like amazing. Asada Shakur, who's like a legendary civil rights icon and like literally just at my everything. I so love her. Wow. Set such an amazing example for young Black women like myself and has really walked so we could run. So I definitely pay respect to all the older people that fought before me and made this possible. So I'm a Gen Zer that appreciates the work of older generations.
Love that. How do you suggest approaching a conversation about racism with a friend or family member that might have a different point of view?
Okay, so as I said earlier, meeting people where they are is extremely important. You can't just expect everybody to wake up in a matter of seconds because of everything that's going on. Like everyone learns and digests things at a different pace. So we can have a conversation about like what it is and like, hey, listen, like we're about to have a conversation. It may be uncomfortable, but it's a necessary one. And if you'd like to have this conversation with me, I'm more than open. I'm making space for you. This is a safe space for us both to have this conversation. And that's how I would approach it. Now, am I expecting someone to change their whole mind overnight? No, because I don't even want people to change their entire minds overnight based off just what I have to say. Like, I want you to actively go and do your own research as well and come to your conclusion. I'm just here as like, you know, this is just a conversation we're having. And, you know, you can't expect Black women, Black people to be your full-time teacher when it comes to racism, right? Because we have our own lives too. Like, you know, that we got to do. So it's like, you know, yeah, we're here. Like, we want you to listen to what we have to say and whatnot, but also take it upon yourself to do that necessary research. Overall, like talking about racism, just meeting the person where they are. And that's where you start at.
That's right. It's almost as it's like, it's too important of a conversation that if only one conversation changes them, that maybe they really didn't get it. It needs to be many conversations.
Absolutely.
From different sources, different people. So how do you think, how can allies who maybe aren't sure where to start help and support?
Yeah. So again, allies just coming in with those three things I listed, an open heart, open mind, open ears. And, you know, if you don't know where to start, just ask. It's not okay. It's not bad to ask a question. I don't think any question is really a dumb question. So it's like, you know, if you need clarity on something, just ask for help and, you know, just say, however I can help without overstepping any boundaries. How can I support you? How can I support this movement? Really supporting grassroots organizers that are on the front lines every single day is so important. Like, of course, you know, donating to these bigger organizations are, you know, it's helpful and important, but there's like young grassroots organizers like myself and others that are on the front lines doing this necessary work every single day. and it is free. Like, it is not, you know, it is not paid. I don't get paid to organize protests or any of that, to like write bills or nothing. So it's like, you know, supporting young Black organizers is important as well, just as much as these bigger organizations. So supporting grassroots organizers, grassroots organizations, and all that is super, super important.
I agree. You are an absolute inspiration. It makes the rest of us want to get up and get involved. How do you relax and reset?
Yes. So like I said, like, I love cooking. Oh my gosh, I love cooking.
Love that.
That's one of my favorite things to do, as well as like hair and makeup and all that other stuff. Like, I'm super girly. Like, I like tell people, like, I have a huge platform in activism and all that stuff. But I'm like, I'm really just like a regular young person. Like, I love like a majority of the things young people like to do. So just recognizing, like, you know, my humanity in this work as well is extremely important. So I'm glad you've asked that question.
I love that. I'm super girly too. You know, I raised two young men. I've been married to Philip for 44 years and then raised these two boys, but I'm so super girly. So I love it. I love hair, makeup, all that kind of thing. I do my own hair and makeup for the camera. I love it. And so it was a lot of fun being the only girl in the house with all these men.
Oh, I'm the only girl in my house. Well, out of my brothers, I have five younger brothers and I'm the only girl. Yes, I'm the oldest and only girl.
Oh, wow. I love that. So do you feel like it's almost your responsibility to teach those five younger brothers what it means to be a woman and a girl and how to respect them?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, me and my brothers, we have that conversation every single day, and what it means to show up for women and to be an ally. Like, we have those important conversations. They probably tired of my mouth, but yeah.
They're so blessed to have you as a role model. They're all going to realize that as they get older, how lucky they are to have a female like you to show them what it's like to be a woman. I love that. Can you tell us about Vote 2000?
Absolutely. So Vote 2000 is a national campaign that rolled out in 2018, started in 2017, and its efforts are to get more young people of color and Black folks registered to vote in disenfranchised communities. We've been working really hard recently. In 2018, we were able to get over 100,000 young people registered to vote in partnership with DoSomething.org. So it's just like, you know, an amazing campaign that we're turning into an organization that is focused on getting young people of color and Black people in disenfranchised communities activated and educated on what civics looks like and how you can show up in your democracy. So that's really the basis of what Vote 2000 is and what it stands for. And, you know, a lot of times when we talk about voting and the importance of young people showing up, we're usually talking about college educated people, right? Young folks in college. And, you know, a lot of times people forget about, what about the young folks that didn't go to college? What about the young folks in disenfranchised communities, impoverished communities, and inner cities, and even people in rural areas? We forget about that demographic a lot when it's come when we talk about what young voters showing up looks like. So including the people that are most impacted and marginalized into the conversation and really helping change that narrative and turn it around.
That's right. They have that right. They have those rights. So we cannot forget them.
Absolutely.
Oh, I love it. I am so thrilled to hear about that. I cannot wait to see how many register for this election coming up.
Yes.
Whew. Congratulations. We've come to a place in the podcast that I talked about earlier. We do two things consistently with every podcast. And the second one is we play a game. How do you feel about games?
I love games.
Oh, good. I do too. So for this game, I thought it would be great to highlight some important organizations as well as educational materials. Now, I know that doesn't sound like a game, but it's going to be a fun game. So I'm going to ask multiple choice questions, and you're going to guess which is the right answer. So the first one is, Uprooting Racism is a powerful book written by, I'm going to give you two authors, Paul Cavell or Glennon Doyle?
Paul Cavell.
Yes.
Okay, cool. Because I know I read that in school when I was in like my junior year of high school. That was like a book project we had. Yeah.
It's a great book. It's a great book. Okay. Okay, the next question. Reclaim the Block organization was founded in A, 2000 or B, 2018?
I've heard of them. There's so many different ones. There's so many, like,
organizations. I know.
Okay, I'm going to say 2000?
It's 2018.
2018?
I was very surprised about that because I thought it was good. It'd been
so many, like, there's so many different organizations with that.
I know.
This is probably like the most. So 2018. Okay, cool.
Okay, so Color of Change has roughly this many members: 1.7 million or B, 100,000?
100,000?
1.7 million.
Oh, okay.
Can you believe it?
Wow, they definitely grew. I think this has absolutely contributed to that. That's amazing.
I know. Okay, so the next one, Color of Law, A Forgotten History of How Our Government Segregated America, was written in 2017 or 1997.
I'm going to say 2017.
Yes.
Okay.
That's a great book. We're going to list all of these on the website, like I said. Okay. The only female speaker at the March on Washington in 1963 was A, Josephine Baker, or B, Ruby Bridges?
I'm going to say, it had to be, was it Josephine?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I knew it had to be Josephine because I'm like, Ruby was still really young around that time. So I'm like, okay, yeah, it had to be Josephine Baker. Yes.
Okay. The Loveland Foundation is committed to showing up for communities of color in unique and powerful ways with a particular focus on A, children, B, Black women and girls.
Black women and girls?
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true.
Okay.
Oh, gosh. I'm sweating this. Okay, this is the last one. Dorothy Height, known as the godmother of the civil rights movement, began her activism work in the 1910s, 1930s.
1930s.
Yes. Isn't this funny? You're so smart.
That was super fun. Oh, my gosh.
Okay. Well, listen, that is unfortunately the end of today's episode. So, Nupal, I am so impressed by you and all that you've accomplished from such a very young age. You should be incredibly proud of yourself. I know that you are. And I know I'm super proud of you. Can you tell the listeners where to find you online?
Yes. So you can follow me on social media. Find me on Instagram at Nupal_justice, NUPOL_justice. Same thing on Twitter. I'm most active on Instagram. That's like my favorite social media platform. So you can definitely find me there. I'm really accessible and I try to respond to as many messages and comments as I can.
I just love it. And I know they will too. Secret Squad, if you liked today's episode, please leave a review on the podcast page. I read them all. And don't forget to check out I've Got a Secret with RobinMcGraw.com for extras, recipes, and more information on how you can get involved in organizations you are passionate about. Until next week, bye-bye.